kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you?
I'm fine.
Just fine?
Yeah. I mean, I thought I was going to be far worse, but then I took a 2-hour nap, so now I'm fine.
I'm jealous. I need a nap so bad. I am so tired. Ashley and I are, we're going to be stuck babysitting the rest of the week, and my niece is a handful.
Surely not.
You know, so chamomile tea.
Give her you don't know whether to laugh or cry.
I don't know what I signed up for, agreeing for 3 days. Oh, man.
Look here. I survived with 3 youngins every day of the week and do honky dory.
Yeah, but you made them. That's your own fault.
Hey, you opted for the chance to watch the niece, right? You could have been like, you know, look at the time.
I want more your outs than I did.
Well, see, I needed to watch her because I needed money to ship things out. I've been going on for a couple of weeks now about that Mercari site. By the weekend, I should have enough for a PC.
Oh, so wait, this isn't out of the kindness of your heart. This is a business transaction.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, make it work then. You get no sympathy here, man. You gotta work hard for that money. Did it.
I had 8 packages to ship on Monday, and it cost like $85. That's how much shipping costs anymore.
But I'm confused a little, though. If this is one of those things, like if Mercari is anything like eBay, don't you pass the shipping on to the customer who wants to buy your stuff?
You can, but it's a pain in the ass because you have to like do it through them and have like prepaid labels and go through them and everything else. And it's much easier for me to just go to the post office and mail it out instead of buying a printer.
Ah, touché.
Yeah.
Good luck finding it. I've been trying to buy a printer for 3 months. You're not going to find a printer
now. I hope. Like, Joy-Cons are popping up now, so maybe it's all
printers. I cannot find a printer to save my life.
I need a Joy-Con.
I just took a Joy-Con back to the store to get another Joy-Con because it was in a better color.
I had more luck finding replacement Joy-Cons than I did finding a printer.
I feel bad, though. Like, I took the Joy-Cons back. I had a pair of gray guys, and I was like, oh, like, but my, you know, my ones that are drifting, they're gray. And my thought is I don't want to get more grays in case, you know, I had managed to somehow fix the drifter. So I saw they had red and blues there, so I took the unopened gray Joy-Cons back to the store, went to the exchange counter and said, hey, I like to exchange these for these. They mangled the hell out of that box to open. I'm like, you do realize that's a brand new product. You can sell that. Tore that box up, and now it's getting shipped back to Nintendo, I guess, because they know I got to buy a ripped up box.
Yeah.
Joy-Cons. Brand new Joy-Cons. Just ripped it.
I was able to get the girls purple and orange Joy-Cons, and they had plenty of them in stock, and I was just like, fuck it, get them purple and orange. That's what they're using now. They had stick drift on their blue.
Wait, when did you get it? Red.
Huh?
When did you get it?
They got it for Christmas, so we got it back November, end of November.
But I'm talking about the new ones. You said that they're easy to find. Oh,
the new ones we got literally at like the very beginning of April.
That's surprising to hear because that April, that was when they were hard to get. Like I couldn't find anywhere.
Yeah, D just walked into the store. He was like, oh, they have Joy-Cons. I was like, oh, grab a pair. And he's like, okay.
Could have flipped those bad boys. See, that's why I know you guys are decent people, because you could have flipped the hell out of those.
They just sitting there on the shelf. I was like, cool, grab them a pair.
I had a whole stock of Ring Fits on the shelf, too. Like, oh, look at this. Well, I'm not probably looking for it, so I'll leave it for actual customers. Goodbye.
That's it. I'm thinking I kind of want the purple and yellow Wario colors.
I'm
trying to remember what color pair came with Mario Party.
Oh, I don't know.
Because I know I have them over there somewhere, but I'm lazy and don't want to stand up.
And they had the best looking Joy-Cons in Japan only for the Dragon Quest XI Special Edition Switch.
Let me guess, they're slimes.
You couldn't buy, yeah, they were dark blue and they had slimes on them, very tastefully done, and you couldn't even buy them separately. You had to buy the entire system, and oh, it sold man. Out immediately and forever.
But yep. honestly, that's what you want, though, because, well, I guess if there's a collector's that sells quick, you don't even get to really wait for a sale. But there were, like, times during the Best Buy scenario. In fact, that's how I got most of my extra controllers. When Best Buy was doing their Best Buy Rewards Program or whatever it was called, Gamers Club Unlocked, I got the Mario Party Pack and the Smash Brothers with the controller pack at, like, 20% off, which seems like, oh, that's not a big deal. But considering that it's a combo pack, and you don't ever get discounts on controllers, literally ever. That was a really good setup. And like, if it was a buy two, get one sale, well, then guess what? You're getting your game with a controller and then a buy, get two more games, and one of them is free. It's like, it's a good, I like when games are packed with controllers. It ends up being like easier to exploit that way.
Well, there's plenty of them on eBay for $300.
Jeez. All right, I wonder if I could do buy two, get one free on eBay. Yeah. I wish.
Plenty of the system, too, for $900.
Yeah.
There was a Dragon Quest Switch?
Yeah. Yeah, the Dragon Quest Switch is on the... People flipping them.
I always hate that the most, though. People buy the system out the gate. It's like, I love this console, and I'm ready to play. You, like, buy the system. And it's like, for all those people who wanted to wait and not keep us afloat, here's the better model. Get it right now. Like, but I wanted, why didn't you just, can't I get a shell or something? No, whole system. Gotta buy it again.
Yeah.
Damn.
If
thing.
You can.
Exactly. That's a good point, because I get Animal Crossing almost like that. Good luck getting that damn thing.
Oh, I bought several of them in the game.
That darn game. Which, well, on the positive, I am officially Animal Crossing cured, I think.
Are you?
Probably. I think so. I'm almost positive I got weeds all over my town. I bought turnips like three Sundays ago. And two Sundays ago, I forgot to wake up to get them. And I was like, oh, crap, I forgot to get turnips. Oh, well. Which was like the only time this ever happened. And all of a sudden, just like it was downhill from there. I was like, I'm cured. I don't want turnips anymore.
I have not purchased a single turnip since I started the game. Because I have not once woken up before noon on a Sunday.
The turnips for me were like most of the fun. I liked just market watching and getting friends to collaborate. Like I never spent the money I got from the turnips. I have another friend who actually maxed out the bank account from turnip turnips. He would buy another, and I'm not even making this up because there's photos of it. He would buy so many turnips that every spot on the entire island was a turnip and his house. God. And then he would flip them all. Get people to help him move the product and then pay them all tips.
That's ridiculous.
It's a video game about being friends with animals.
And at one point I was like, why are you doing this? You'll never spend that many bells. And he was just like, I want to be a billionaire. I just want to max out the account. I was like, hey, whatever's fun for you, I guess, but I can't fathom why, like, what value comes from maxing out the bank account. And of course, there was like no message for it because even Nintendo was like, no one's going to fucking do this.
Yeah.
Even the cat was like, someone did what?
The timing on that meow was so good.
What with the bells?
Classic Raven.
I know, also, right?
Gabe is laying on top of my computer, so if I just poof before I can stop him from hitting the power button, then you know what happened.
Well, if that's going to happen, we should probably get to things. We got a bunch of games to talk about tonight. Should we dive into these?
Sure.
Might as well, right?
Dern tootin'.
Well, first game to talk about is called Desperados 3, developed by MiMiMi Games, published by THQ Nordic, released June 16th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $59.99. Desperados 3 is a story-driven, hardcore, tactical, stealth game set in a ruthless Wild West scenario. In this long-awaited prequel to the beloved classic Desperados Wanted, Dead or Alive, you experience the origin story of the infamous John Cooper and his gang. Combine your specialists to overcome tough challenges in many different ways, plan your moves wisely, and execute them perfectly in real time to sneak past your enemies while remaining undetected. Purnell, tell us about Desperados 3.
Desperados 3 is easily my... Purnell's what the heck, this is a game award of the month, because I love this game. I never heard of this franchise or series, and I really was not excited about the review. It was like, something to try. And I'm playing, I was like, holy shit, this game is fantastic. This is a sleeper. So clearly you already know what my response is going to be at the end, but the actual game itself, what the heck is it? Well, it is a sequence. It's a game that takes place amongst a sequence of scenarios, basically stage after stage, that tells a story, like you said, of how John Cooper's gang comes together, what draws them together, and what makes them kind of form a bond as a unit. But before you get to that point, you have to deal with each individual scenario. And the way in which this game plays this out is honestly a very enjoyable sequence. So what will end up happening is, like, at the beginning of a level, a story element will play. Usually just like a setting, just a setup for the actual stage. It might do a pan out of the level, might be some story bits that'll play out. But then at the end of the day, eventually something's going to happen. It's going to give you kind of a lay of the land. Like, this is what's going to happen. And then you're introduced to the people that will be engaging you on that level. Usually between one to all the members of the gang, because again, they're introducing you to them as you play. And the scenarios will ultimately determine who's working with you on that situation. Like, it might be a level where you meet a person and you got to work together to get out of the situation that you're in. Or you might just be all going to a place together to take out a leader of a rival gang, or kill a rival. Or you might be trying to pull off a heist. Any number of freaking things, depending on how the story plays out. But ultimately, you will be in control of one or more characters when this breaks out. Now, what ends up happening is you are able to control one or more characters at any time, because you can pretty much select one or do that thing where you hold down the button and select multiple characters at once. And then you can walk them around in real time on the map. And your opposition is also, or actually not even just the opposition, just everyone on the stage is also kind of doing routines as well on the stage. Like, you might have guards patrolling, or if you're in a town, you might have like civilians just kind of talking in the middle of town, having conversations, which you can eavesdrop on sometimes if you're nearby. But ultimately, the set piece will play out. You have a goal, and your objective is to meet that goal. And what ends up happening is, despite the fact that there's a game called Desperados, and the cover is like a guy with like guns and mess, and you do get guns, the majority of this game will be spent with you stealth killing and knocking people out, because the name of the game is that you will always be outgunned and outmanned on every single stage, but you still need to get through to meet your objective. So what happens is you'll be tiptoeing through an environment, hiding in bushes, you know, creeping up on characters or opposition, and then when you get a chance to, you might end up knocking people out. You get tools depending on the character, which will allow you to distract, or, you know, kind of lure, things of that nature. It's basically, the name of the game is Lure and Distract, or Blind. And every character has some tool which will allow you to do that. So, for example, the main character gets like a fake coin, which he can flick, and makes a sound when it lands. And if it's close enough to a guy, he'll go, "What the heck was that?" And he'll turn and he'll look for it. And while he's looking for the sound, that's your cue to sneak on past. There's another character who, rather than make them turn their head, he can lure them directly to him. Like, hey, he'll whistle, and the guy's, "What the heck is that?" He'll start walking towards you. But then one of his other skills complements that, because he gets a bear trap. So he sets the bear trap down. The guy walks in the bear trap, gets clomped, and he's dead. And then at that point, you have a decision to make, what to do with the body. Because, again, like I mentioned, there are patrols and units that are also out, you know, exploring and like just kind of moving around the field. And if one of them spots an unconscious body or a dead body, or even hears or sees you killing that body, well, you're in a lot of trouble, because an alarm will sound, other guys will come out of freaking like sheds and bars and basements or wherever the heck they're hanging out at, and you can pretty much kiss your ass goodbye, because yeah, you got guns, but you will not survive the onslaught. It's kind of funny they even give you health bars, because honestly, anytime I trigger an alarm, I just start it over, which is convenient though, because this game, unlike a lot of games that I've played over the last few years, the name of the game is fail, 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 fail again until you get it right.
I thought the name was Desperados.
Not Failurados. The game offers a very quick and easy save and reload point, almost like the equivalent of playing an emulator, where you press one button, boom, game immediately creates a save state. And then if you need to reload, you press the start button, and it automatically starts you at the most recent save that you can choose up to, like the top three saves you made, and then bam, jump back into the game. And it incentivizes you to retry situations over and over and over again. And you're going to have to, because especially if you're not a patient man like I am not, you're going to screw up often. So to give you an example, two things may be a good thing that result in that, which is one, I'm used to playing a lot of games where I'm using one character, and that character has every ability that I want to use, right? So if it's a situation where I'm trying to get multiple characters across a map, and I'm controlling the one character whose ability is to put on a disguise and then walk up to characters and like kind of draw their gaze by like flirting with them and stuff, which there's a character that does that named Kate. I might be like, okay, I got this guy confused. I got this guy distracted, but how do I distract the other guy so I can sneak past them both? And I completely forget that the other guy can flick a coin and distract the second guy because I'm too busy focusing on the one character and what she can do. So the more characters you have on a stage, the more complicated the scenarios become, because you find yourself with this huge box of tricks distributed amongst multiple characters, and you have to remember they can all do X certain things, and you have to coordinate all that tricks. And another cool feature that ties into that, before I even go into that, the second thing that I wanted to mention is the fact that if you're impatient, you might not be mindful of everybody whose eyes are on you. Like if you're in a room and you're focused on two guards against the wall that are just kind of leaning, chewing tobacco and looking out at you, you might not see the guy up on the balcony leaning over, just kind of hanging out, minding his own business, because you're focused over here. So you'll start sneaking past, like you pull up the perfect plan, and then you see that vision cone shoot out. You're like, fuck, that's that for that game. I'm dead. But another thing that makes it kind of cool to execute these awesome plans, which is actually one of my favorite features of the game, is something called Showdown. And what Showdown is by pressing a button, you kind of freeze the game, and it allows you to set up a bunch of macros to pull off a move. So let's say, for example, you have three guys, and there are, let's say, four guys on the screen that you need to get past or, you know, debilitate at the same time. So you might have the main character pull out his gun and aim it at two characters at once. You can shoot two characters with two guns simultaneously in this mode. He aims at two characters. You have another character who slowly walks up behind the guy to wring his neck and slit his throat. And you have the other guy who blinds the last guy with like a perfume bar that blinds him. You set all the macros up, you press execute, and you just watch this masterpiece run where all this stuff starts happening. And you're like, it worked. This is beautiful to watch. Like just watching a perfectly executed plan feels so damn good to pull off. I can't even emphasize that enough, how great that feels. And if you fuck it up, you'll still be like, okay, I was close, but I was wrong on this one element. Let's try it again. Reload the save. And when you finish a stage, it runs the entire play session on one blown up map. Everything you did, it shows you everything you did, every guy you killed and how you killed them. It shows you how the mistakes you made. It's insane. And it does it in like a speed motion. So like if it took you an hour to beat the stage, you just watch it. Now, the sucky part being for me, this isn't for most people, but I'm sure for people like me, is that if I know that there is a time challenge, I feel bad when I don't meet it. And the first level I played in this game, I was like, yes, there's no clock. I can just play to my heart's content. No big deal. And I beat the stage, and then like a set of badges popped up. Badges are like achievements in game. And it might be like, you know, kill three guys with a box or make this bell crush a bunch of people or something like that. And then there's always a thing that says beat level in 5 minutes. I'm like, who the hell's going to do that? It took me an hour to beat it. I'm not beating this in 5 minutes. So it basically expects you to have like this perfect run. And I immediately told myself, you will never do that. You will never do that. Make yourself ignore it, because the game is a lot of fun just trying to figure out the stages. But I don't think I have the mentality to try to beat this game with like a good time. It's fuck it. I just want to play the game, see the story, pull off awesome plans, and like fine tune these executions. But when I get it right, it's a fun time, and it's something I did not expect to enjoy. And aside from like things like beat the level in 5 minutes or whatever, there's also other challenges that'll unlock after you beat a stage. And it might be like just goofy things like beat a level without killing any of the people on the level, or complete a stage without ever firing your guns and stuff like that. And while some levels might not even require you to fire a gun, which is like easy peasy in that regard, because you might have just fired the guns because you're like, hey, I want to shoot dudes, which if you got that kind of mentality, I don't know how you're going to succeed, because every time I fired a gun, it was like a calculated move And I always had to expect somebody to hear it unless they were always shooting the last people left on the stage, or in the area that I was in anyway. But if you want to get that extra bit of oomph in the game, you can go back and try to meet those extra goals and see if you can pull them off. Because one thing about this that was cool is also, for the most part, even though you might have to kind of have like a sort of progression through the level, like, okay, I need to get these targets, you kind of get free reign of how you want to attempt it. They just give you a playground with a few different tools. And if you spot those tools, that's great. And there's certain elements that end up becoming fun that you can pull up if you can see them. Like, one general thing you can do is, and I'll stop rambling after this because, God, I can keep talking about this game. Is
well, it's good that you could talk about it because I've been hearing nothing but good reviews about this game. So I'm happy that you enjoyed it as well.
Thank you, sir. It's so great. But like, one of the things that you can do that I think is really cool is, like, this is early in the game, so it's not a spoiler per se. It's just a thing you can do. Is so there's a level where you have to kick out multiple targets, right? And you're in the middle of a town. And, of course, taking out multiple targets, you're like, how do I do this in a way that doesn't arouse suspicion or draw ire? Because while you're on city streets in the town, no one bothers you. But if you go into, like, you know, gang turf, quote-unquote, now, if someone sees you, you shouldn't be there. Or if they hear you, you shouldn't be there. You're in trouble. So one of the guys, I'm like, okay, how do I get this guy? How do I take him out? What do I do? And then I realized something. He was hanging around a bull. So I hid in the bushes. Or I didn't even hide in the bushes. I hid in the bushes to get to a shed, climbed the top of the shed, flicked the fake coin, and hit the bull while the guy was petting the bull. The coin freaked the bull out, and he gored the guy and killed him. And it was all above the board because no one realized that I triggered the bull. It was just like, oh, he must have pissed that bull off, and it killed him. Oh, well. You know. So I was like, cool stuff like that you can do. And since every character gets about three abilities they can utilize, I honestly feel like that's a pretty decent array of stuff, especially once you start trying to chain abilities between different characters. It creates an interesting array of opportunities and options for you. Yeah, someone might come into this and say, but all it is really a stealth game across different stages. Like, yeah, so what? That's great. It's a good option. It's a good thing to have. We play how many games where the object is just to kill everybody, which, admittedly, you're going to kill everybody in this game, too, if you can help it. But you're going to do it stealthily and with great genius. So, all in all, I think Desperados is probably a game that you've never heard of until now. And I think it is a game that is very, very worthy of your time. More so than a lot of the big releases that are popping out, to be perfectly honest with you. This game is legit. And I don't think you will in any way feel like you wasted your money or your time by picking this up. If anything, you'll be doing your money and while a service by donating it towards getting this cause, or towards this cause, rather. It's just good. It's a fantastic game.
Nice. So $60, your overall verdict?
Buy the hell out of it. Pick it up today.
Awesome.
Prawn.
You know what else is awesome? The fact that Root Beer Is My Jam just subbed for the 14th month. That is crazy. 14 months.
Fucking yeah.
Root Beer, thank you as always for the sub. And Cole, you subbed for Lightspeed earlier as well.
I did. I gifted one. I can't be having people in the chat without kitty cats.
Yeah, everyone needs the kitty cat.
Root Beer Is My Jam is my jam.
All right, but moving on. Next game to talk about is called Nordic Warriors, developed by Liron Peer and Roman Levin, published by Mashmashu Studio, released June 19th on Steam for $19.99. Enter the real-time tactical nightmare of Nordic Warriors and use your handful of brave souls to stem an endless horde of undead horrors. You'll need to take advantage of the terrain and use your hero abilities to heal and lead your units as you blast, smash, or slash your way through the unfolding apocalypse. Chris, tell us about Nordic Warriors.
All right, Nordic Warriors. So this is, and by the way, the I checked through the credits, and you know, they're not kidding. Like, the developers, like, pretty much two people.
Yeah.
So already props for that. It's definitely a higher quality than a Gilson B. Pontus kind of game. So doubling the people is a good start, apparently. Of course, I by no means mean to compare either of those two individuals to Gilson B. Pontus.
Gilson is in a tier of his own.
He's in his own stratosphere. So Nordic Warriors?
Yes. Nordic Warriors.
Yeah, I was like, was it one warrior or two warriors? I don't remember. I've already forgotten. I even have it tabbed over on here because I'm going to read some stuff here in a bit. This is a real-time strategy game, and as they report on the Steam page, it is heavily influenced by an old series called Myth, which is kind of an RTS real-time strategy game that focuses entirely on the tactical combative part of the kind of game. So, something I've had more experience with, I actually barely play RTSs out myself, but the ones that I did play were the Warcraft games. Up until it became a World of, and then I stopped entirely. But basically, it's the kind of game where, you build your armories and you build your town squares and you start generating units and collecting resources and keeping the horde at bay or whoever. And, kind of doing all that, right? Living your best real-time strategy life. Well, games like Myth and this game, take away all of that resource management type crap, and they just send you're at the point where you have your main character and an army, and you got to get depending on the stage, of course, you have different things that you have to do. But for the first couple of stages, it's just get them from one part of the map to the other part of the map, and in that the game is a little simpler, but it's also great because, for one, those are all your characters. You don't get to generate more if you get your ass handed to you. It's you actually do have to manage these characters and all their health. And
you have a set crew and you got to make the most of them.
Exactly. You got your captain and your red shirts, and you got to make sure to keep the red shirt deaths to a minimum. So you play as a Viking lady called Freya. And she is a shaman type of character, so she can do a magic explosion that can severely damage a block of space on the terrain, and any enemy or ally that's in there is going to get huge damage. And she can also heal characters. And then the characters are going to be your short range fighter types, your longer range archer types, and then as different quests pop up, they'll drop in different types of units and stuff like that. Like, you get into a town and now there's guards for that town, and there's also a one that this game is particularly proud of is the alchemist type, which apparently is based on a dwarf bomber from Myth. It's basically, they even have the insane Scottish accents, and they can infinitely throw bombs at enemies from a medium distance, and they have a limited amount of mines that they can place on the terrain, and that leads to possibly the main type of strategy on these kind of games, which is called kiting. I found out, I actually researched this a little bit. But it's basically where it's not so much that you are marching your soldiers from one point of the map to the other and just slaughtering anything that comes by. You're going to get completely killed very quickly that way. What it is you send out a couple of units or a unit or, a small party to bring the enemy into range of traps and, like your archers and your magicians and things like that, or weaken them to the point where you can bring them over to your short range fighters and then have them stab them to death while taking minimal damage. You could go in there and just explode everybody with just your shaman main character, but the thing is that your characters get stronger if they are able to kill a lot of enemies and survive the battle. So it actually does behoove you to keep your characters alive throughout as many levels as possible, because that will ultimately make them better characters. And that's represented on the screen by a star system. Every character that you click on, you can see how many times they've, how many things they've killed and how many battles they've survived. And they've got this, out of 10, star rating system kind of thing. So it becomes, it's really this kind of thing of like I said, it's combat tactics. And like, this is, in my opinion, one of the better ways to handle such a thing. And then, yeah, like I said, it's basically, you know, you get your characters over the hump. Now, as you're moving around the mini map, of course, your blue dots, and then enemies will appear as red dots. They're triggered by, you don't get to see where the enemies are on the map initially. Like, you actually have to get into their territory for them to appear, because they're zombies. So they're kind of coming out of nowhere, you know? Mm. And, so yeah, you actually have to like kind of explore the map a little bit. And again, it behooves you to do so, because more zombies that, you know, you might go to other points on the map that aren't in the direct path to the goal, for the mere reason of like bringing up more enemies to fight, and thus make your character stronger for the much harder battles ahead. And the battles ahead are much harder. I am a wimp, so I played it on the easiest difficulty, and I still had I had some struggles, but they were cool struggles. The third stage actually has three points of entry. You're defending a town from the zombie hordes, including Skellymans and like other zombies that can cast magic. And you have your own team as well as the city guard that you're actually controlling at the same time. So you're actually kind of fighting three battles at once.
Wow.
And yeah, it gets really intense and it's super exciting. So, I was actually, yeah, really engaged with this one. And, you know, beyond that, beyond the actual battle mechanics, I mean, the entire story is narrated by a really good narrator. I've forgotten his name, but he also narrates the tutorial, and he has this dry old man English like delivery of all the lines. It's worth playing the tutorial just to hear the guy talk. It's actually pretty funny.
Nice.
Yeah, I actually really like it. Plus, you're going to want to learn how to use these characters too. Because it's mouse and keyboard, and you got to remember things like, you know, when you highlight a certain amount of characters, you know, F1 toggles it on and off, like whether those characters are highlighted or not, you know, things like that. You know, there's a little bit of, you know, maneuvering the keyboard that you have to learn, but not too much. I was actually surprised at how not difficult that was. But yeah, so, oh, and yeah, I was going to mention about the shaman too, is that the shaman can heal your character units as they fight, but she has a limited amount of heals. So that's another kind of thing about it. It's like you only get so many chances. You can't just throw yourself into the enemy kind of deal.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really cool game, and I really am excited about it. And I actually wanted to read the flavor text about the difficulty levels in the game, if I may.
Go for it.
All right. So your easiest difficulty, which I've mostly been playing on, is Peasant. It says, I'm going to read this as dramatically as I can. The units under your command are made of adamantine, shrugging off magic attacks with ease. You will cleave through the mindless shuffling hordes of decaying undead and their pathetic masters. Your weapons will grow slick with the ichor of endless hellish legions, their shrieks and death rattles like music to your ears. That's Peasant.
Nice.
And then Warrior is the normal difficulty, I would say. Thousands of mindless ambulatory meat sacks will slowly throw themselves upon your weapons while you bestride the battlefield like an invulnerable godling. Undead legions will dull your sword and blunt your axe as they expire in mountains of fading revenants, back to dust, back to the grave, chased by the sound of your laughter and scorn. All right, and then hard mode is called Hero. A clever and resourceful enemy will stalk you across the blasted landscapes of your home laid waste by undead armies. Fell creatures and ghastly deathless hordes will swarm from all directions seeking your destruction. You must be quick and tireless, taking advantage of terrain, eldritch magics, and the courage of your warband.
My lord.
And then finally, the hardest mode is called Ragnarok. The unceasing tide of undead warriors and their sorceress allies will soon slake their thirst on your blood. You will need every trick, every stratagem, and a great share of luck simply to survive. Expect the loss of most or all of your forces. Your kith and kin will surely fall to the claws of corruption. Only by your efforts do we dare hope of mere survival.
I love when games have fun with their difficulty.
Yeah, this game is, it's really, you know, it definitely doesn't take itself seriously when it doesn't have to. So,
that's good.
Yeah.
Well, $20 on it, what do you think?
Yeah, $20, I say this is definitely worth it. It's a very, very good effort, considering the size of the development team, I mean, for sure. You know, like, the graphics and music aren't going to be anything too original, and they credit that they're basically just resources from, you know, various websites and stuff. So, you know, it's really something that you're going to want to get into if you dig, like, the combat aspect of an RTS, and they do that really, really well. So I would say definitely worth it. And yeah, make sure to listen to that tutorial.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cole, what are you doing? Dropping biddies?
Having a moment.
300 biddies. And then before you, Candy Pants came in and dropped 10 biddies. So
yes,
a lot of biddies being dropped tonight. What's going on?
What's happening? You get emotes.
Emotes.
You drop 300 or more.
So you don't like me, you just like the emotes.
I like emotes.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Alwa's Legacy, developed and published by Elden Pixels, released June 17th on PC for $17.99. Alwa's Legacy is a modern retro game full of dangerous dungeons, magical items, and ancient secrets. By upgrading your magic any way forward is right in this non-linear adventure game full of exploration. Purnell, tell us about Alwa's Legacy.
Alwa's Legacy is a... Well, I love how I was going to just do that thing I usually do lately, but no, I'll talk about the game, actually. Alwa's Legacy is a sequel to Alwa's Awakening, and it's kind of weird in the sense that it kind of feels like this, well, it doesn't feel like it is the same world as Alwa's Awakening, but it's done in like a more 16-bit style environment. And of course, all the levels look different and they're mapped differently, and there's new places to go to, so it's not like a complete rehash or anything. But it's done in a way where it's kind of cool to kind of explore the new environments or the old places in new ways and still kind of chart your course around the map. Now, the idea behind Alwa's Legacy is you're basically trying to find the four gems to power a magic book, which will allow Alwa or Zoe, who's the main character, to quote unquote get home. I want to say it is linear-ish, but you won't feel it. It's one of those games where the linearity may come across in like a more natural sense, because you're just going to kind of feel like I need to go this way because it just feels like I need to go that way. It's very rarely a case of like I can't go here unless I have the item that's clearly from this dungeon or something. Which I do like that about this game, because I do enjoy the exploration of it. One of the biggest ways you traverse the map, or how you gain access to new places, is by making use of three magic spell types that Zoe can utilize. Now, in the original Alwa's Awakening, you had three spell types. Block, which you could use to create a block, and then you could push it and then stand on it to get a little extra height in your stance. You have bubble, which you create a bubble, which allows you can then jump onto as a floating stepping stone to then get to another location before it pops. And like bolt, which is a lightning bolt that you could fire to hit distant enemies and objects. Those same three spells return in this game, but whereas in the last game you had one upgrade you could find throughout the course of the game, in this game they did something a little different. Scattered around the world are blue orbs that you can find by solving various puzzles, or honestly sometimes just stumbling across them or opening chests and dungeons. And depending on how many you get, you can go to a wizard in the middle of one of the main towns in the game and use them to purchase upgrades for your different spells. So to give you an example, the green block, again, you can just kind of create a block and push it and stand on it. One of the upgrades you can purchase allows you to make it so that whenever you push the block, a spike will just jut out of the side of the block. So now if you push the block into enemies, you do damage to them. And then, of course, one of the more important upgrades for that item is you can push the block into water, and then the block will float across the water. So you can kind of use it to cross lakes and stuff. Now, you need a certain number of orbs to activate the different upgrades. There's a total of 99 orbs you can find in the game. But on the positive, you don't need to be committed to any of the upgrades you make. You can go to the wizard in town, spend X number of orbs to get upgrades that you want, as long as you can afford them all. Do the thing you need to do, and if you find yourself like, you know what, I don't want these upgrades in favor of this upgrade, I only have this many orbs, you can go back and reallocate your orbs to do something to get a different combination of abilities. So you never really feel locked in, but also it kind of takes a little bit of the emphasis on the need of getting everything, unless there's like a puzzle you might come across that feels like it needs all the abilities at the later end of the trees, because you might just be able to say, I'm going to buy, just use enough orbs to get this floating across the water ability, and this whatever else is just, I'll just get it. So that's kind of a nice thing, but also a little detriment to the orbs, because I never really felt compelled. Like, I was finding them for fun, which, because I love the game, but I never felt like I needed to find them once I got past like maybe 30 of them. And then there's other things you can kind of find too, like there's a bunch of different save areas that you can come across in the game. And there's these gems, like these little green teardrop gems that you can find also from various quests that you might come across in the game, or like through like solving puzzles and getting them as rewards. And with those teardrops, you can insert it into a save point and it becomes a warp point. So you'll find yourself early on when you don't have a lot of teardrops thinking, is this a place that's worth using a teardrop? Am I going to want to warp back to this save point? Yes or no? And then at that point, once you decide finally that you want to insert this teardrop, bam, now you have a quick warp spot that you can warp to and also warp from, because you can only warp from places that you've already inserted a teardrop to. So that's one of the things that they add. Those are two things they add to the game. But then lastly, one other thing that they add to the game is abilities. So abilities are like magic spells that impart actual action. So there's four in the game total, in addition to like a couple passive abilities you can kind of get, like a dash jump, which isn't an ability, it's just something once you get, you can do it. But the abilities are like little spell thing. And when you activate them, they might let you do something like, say, walk on spikes for a little while. And it's a temporary buff, but then once it wears off, you can recharge it in one of two ways, either leaving the screen you're on or holding down the charge of the spell button, and you'll kind of charge it up. So the entire point of doing that is so that you can't like spam. Let's say, for example, that there's the spike walking that I was telling you about. You can't let the spike, you know, spike immunity wear off while on spikes and then just reactivate it. You have to actually be in a safe place to charge the spell or charge spell ability and then use it again. And that's the purpose for them making you do that, which I can kind of respect, honestly. It's been a great game for me. Like, I like the idea of going to the different dungeons because the dungeons are all themed. And then when you enter them, there's just like a typical, I don't want to call it, no, it is like Zelda. Who am I kidding? There are a series of like puzzles you can solve, which will allow you to traverse the environment or come across keys that you can use to unlock doors. There's a chest that's usually hidden in each area, which when you open it, it might just reward you a few more blue orbs, that sort of thing. And it's honestly just kind of fun to explore the different tombs and or dungeons and resolve the puzzles within. I've never come across one where I found myself bored or just tapped out. Though, one downside, which again is another case of not really a downer, just something worth acknowledging, is that if you've played Always Awakening, if you heard my review of that game, I loved it. And you might remember me thinking it was like probably one of my favorite games in a long time. And I still talk about it in that manner. But one of the things that that game had is reused letter in this game. And that is how the manner of dropping the green block to stay on the green block, then dropping a bubble to get on top of the bubble, and then jumping off of that. Like in the first game, it was new and it felt unique. In this game, it's that mechanic being used again. And you do it a lot. It's just a way you'll traverse the world that you're in. It's just how it is. But it doesn't kill the game. It's just, you know, something that I wish there was like a little more variety into how you traverse, given that you already did that in Always Awakening. But the game itself is still a very much enjoyable title. The music by Robert Kreese is still a gem. It's honestly, I'm happy with what I got in this game. I was anxiously awaiting its release, and I like what I got. I was never bored of it, and I actually can recommend it to people who like Always Awakening, or if they've never played it, but they still want to try this one because it looks nicer to them, I think it's still worthy to jump into. You don't even have to play Always Awakening, though. I think if you don't, you're missing out on a good game. You also don't have to do that. It's your choice, but I actually like them both, and I think it's worth your money and your time if you want to dive into it. Is there anything that I did not say, and you're like, what the heck did you not, why did you not mention that, Parno? Tell me about this thing.
No, you covered everything to me. Anyone else have any questions?
No.
Beautiful. I'm glad.
Chris, any questions from you?
Chris is in the cabinet looking for stuff. He's like, yeah, where, David, where are my cups? Where's my cup?
David, that's not coming from me. I don't know what that is.
That's the rabbit.
Somebody's trying to get into the podcast.
Yeah. No one's breaking in. So, Purnell, $18 on Alwa's Legacy. What's your official verdict?
I think this is a solid buy it, too. This has been a good episode of reviews for me. Buy this game. You won't regret it. It's a jam.
Sounds
like
good.
Like root beer.
Root beer is a jam.
It is.
I have some root beer. I should go grab a bottle.
I think that would be quite the jam.
Nah, I'm recording a show. I should probably focus on that, huh?
Nah, root beer.
Questionable.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called The Coma 2 Vicious Sisters, developed by DevPresso Games, published by Head Up, released June 19th on Switch and PS4 for $14.99. Mina Park, a student of Sewa High, awakens at night in her school. It isn't long before she realizes something is amiss. The once familiar school where she spends her evenings studying looks twisted by something dark and sinister. She finds herself pursued by someone or something that looks eerily like her teacher. To survive, Mina must venture beyond the boundaries of her school and into the surrounding district. Chris, tell us about The Coma 2.
Okay, The Coma 2. So this is a horror game. So it's got lots of spooky things and lots of things that jump out and scream at you and stuff like that. So if this
We should mention, the reason Cole isn't covering this one is because it's not on Xbox.
No. Yeah, I was really disappointed. I'm pretty sure it's Switch only, right?
No, Switch and PS4.
Switch and PS4. No. Yeah, and I have a strict rule about not having any spooky games that aren't kid-friendly on the Switch, because they're the primary players of the Switch. So I don't want anything where they like load it up and go, oh, this looks like a cartoon, and then get smashed.
Did you like the first Coma, Cole?
I did like the first Coma. I did.
See, I never played the first Coma.
It was hard. And I'm sure the Coma 2 probably has a lot of the same type of content in it, but whew, it's an emotionally rough game.
Yeah, I'm not sure how emotionally rough this one is. It's like, but yeah, there's definitely, like, it does feel like it's kind of picking up on maybe a story that exists, because there's a character who's in a coma who this game does not really talk about initially. It's just a friend of the, I suppose a friend of the of the protagonist. Like I said, I'm sure it'll be revealed perhaps later, or maybe it's something I'm supposed to know from the coma, but there is that. So what it is that Mina is a, you know, high school girl who is basically, you know, doing normal high school girl things, and that's trying to avoid a guy who's been bothering her, and you know, talking to her friends and stuff, and she has to go buy a chocolate bar for one of her friends, and it's about that time that, she kind of falls into an alternate dimension called the coma, and then things start to get very eldritch. Second time I'm using that word this review. So I'm sorry, I saw a question directed at me, but anyways, so what it is basically a game where it's horror, but. And it's kind of a survival horror, so it's like basically, or I don't know what you would call it, like a run and hide horror game. Like, you don't really have much of a defense in the game. Like, you do have, like, damage you can take, and you have things like, you can defend yourself with quick time events, but for the most part, when the evil lady that looks like your teacher, except she's, you know, horrifying, is running after you, then you can hide into certain spots and control your breathing through QuickTime events. So it's that kind of thing. Very much like that game that I covered not too long ago, but have forgotten the title of. Whoops. but yeah, it does have you, like, you know, hiding around locations and things like that. But it also has, like, things like, because there's, like, bloody tentacle type things just all over the place, and, like, you know, very Lovecraftian sort of creatures. And, you know, that kind of thing where there's, like, ghosts that are sort of phasing in and out and, like, moving in that weird stop motion way that was really popular in, like, about 20 years ago. I don't know if that they're still doing that. I just remember that being a thing in horror films, like, from the late 90s. But anyways, so and there's things like that, and you can, like, actually dodge them and things like that. So there is an element of platforming and running and jumping and stuff like that. But largely, what it kind of ends up being is a kind of an adventure game, like, where you're basically trying to collect objects that are required of you while also picking up items that will help you sort of survive. So, you know, you've got, like, chocolate bars that can, you know, restore your health, or a bottle of water will restore your stamina. And of course, you drain stamina by running. And, you know, if your character's particularly scared, then, you know, that bar starts to go down real quick. And, but it's kind of nice because they give you, maps of certain, of like all the areas that you go to and stuff like that. So you can actually, you know, plan a route, conveniently. The item that you need to get is almost always all the way across an entire building, that you should not be in. But, you know, there's like actually other characters to talk to. There's other interactions to be had. So it's not just, you know, being by yourself, you know, in this thing, you know, you're kind of actually learning about different characters and like their role in this whole thing and trying to figure out, you know, essentially what's going on. And yeah, like I said, it's got some interesting like quirks to it. Like I said, quick time events. And I wouldn't even say it, call it platforming. This is basically like dodging and hiding and, you know, just trying to keep yourself alive while you go to all these different places. And the story's really interesting. Because, like I said, I had no idea what was going on. So, you know, it's actually kind of nice to, like, you know, sort of figure out what these characters are all about. And, yeah, beyond that, it does have some genuinely scary moments in it. You know, there's any definitely...
Any fear pee?
No.
No fear pee? Cole, are you sad?
I mean, I am genuinely sad because the first one was scary as sin. It really was.
Yeah, this one didn't really, like, there's definitely, like, some disturbing imagery, and, like, you know, there's a couple of moments where you turn on the light and, like, there's something, you know, something mm-hmm. there. But, I mean, given the fact that, like, the cutscenes are done in, like, comic book style, where it's, you know, panel by panel, like, I don't know, maybe something didn't click with me, like I didn't feel like I was in danger kind of thing, you know.
The first one takes place in like a high school and revolves around kids basically committing suicide or being driven to suicide because of the stress of final exams.
That has nothing to do with this and one as far as I can tell.
That's why that shit is terrifying and like I said, it had that, like, emotional charge to it, so...
I see.
Is it possible that maybe it's just, like, the way that Chris reacted to it in general? Like, maybe this one would still have that impact on you if you played it.
Maybe.
I don't know. Like, well, I said,
if they bring it to Xbox, we could find out.
Yeah, if they bring it to Xbox, I'm in there.
Like, come on, Dev Presso, and head up. The first one was on Xbox. Why isn't this one?
I'll fear pee my ass off. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I feel like the fact that this was, you know, it very much is like a ghost story, which, you know, ghost stories are less scary to me than other things. And, like, the fact that you're able to, like, have characters, like, there's a character that you run into who is a, you know, in the police station, who kind of serves as your, like, you know, Metal Gear Solid style, you know, calling him on an old Nokia cell phone, and it does the whole, like, conversing with them, and, you know, they kind of help you out while you're helping them out sort of deal. Like, you know, it, I guess the camaraderie of it, like, made kind of undercut the terror.
You don't feel isolated at any point.
Yeah, and I don't feel like the thing that's chasing me, like, it's more of a mystery to me than, like, really scary, because it's, you know, it's like a Ringu style, like, except fully grown lady, or it's like this one other kind of lady with a bloody knife, like, running after you and stuff. Now,
a sort of pair of vicious sisters, would you say?
Yeah, like, that's who's largely chasing you through some of these scenes, and, you know, like, it's as scary as, you know, you hear a door slam, you hear a woman scream, which is, of course, always going to, like, raise the heckles. And then, you know, you got to hide fast because that thing is going to come after you real fast. And if it catches you, then, you know, it's going to do some damage or possibly kill you. So, you know, and it's just all about kind of, like, learning where the good hiding spots are and stuff like that to be able to get past them. And then it's just passing some pretty easy, like, well, easy to me because I play like rhythm games, but yeah. You know, the quick time events are like, you know, it just has a bar going across the screen and you got to push like up, down, and left, and then it switches to something else, you know. So I don't know, I think it's like more interesting than outright horrifying, but your mileage may vary.
Yeah, well, $15 on it, your official verdict?
I think that this is worthwhile. I think that for sure it's going to be more for like I said, it's horror adventure, I think, more than straight up horror. But, you know, if you do like bloody tentacles on the wall and bodies twisted into weird shapes and stuff like that, even though the game kind of establishes that they're not, like, they may or may not be real human bodies. They look more like mannequins kind of stuff. Like, you know, just something that's creepy and will stick with you, but is not gonna like give you, what is it? Fear pee.
Yeah.
Fear pee. Yeah. Then yeah, I'd say that it's definitely well made and it's engaging. So I'd say worth a pickup.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Next game is called Endless Fables Dark Moor, developed by Sunward Games, published by Artifex Mundi, released June 19th on Xbox One for $14.99. During her new adventure, Pamela Cavendish goes to a misty and mysterious Scotland where seemingly innocent landscape of Moor quickly reveals its dark nature. Spectre from the past and ghostly sounds will force her to follow the amazing legend of Red Moon. Cole, what does that mean?
Well, if I tell you, it's a spoiler.
Okay, so don't tell us what that means.
Why do these always ask spoiler questions in the description? Shit, don't do that. So I've complained about this before with Artifex Mundi games. I'm just going to go ahead and get it out of the way first and foremost. This is the third in a series of like five. We don't have one and two on Xbox. I don't know why. I don't know what the deal is. They're clearly out elsewhere. We started off with three. It's interesting to note that the game very obviously picks up after previous events. You don't need to know those events to follow with the story for this one, which is good, but they do reference prior events in the beginning, and you're like, yeah, sure, okay. I have no idea what you're talking about. Fine. It's fine. It's over and done quickly. But they also removed the number 3 from the game on Xbox. So you don't know that this is the third out of 5 and that the others aren't available. That's a pet peeve for me. I like to play them. I love all the Artifex Mundi games. I find that usually with the series ones, the stories are disjointed enough where like they're almost like anthologies, whereas they'll have similar characters or the same character, but she's just in different enough situations each time that you don't give a fuck that you don't know what happened. and this one is no different. So all that aside, yeah, it's a gripe of mine. It bugs me. I wish they would bring them out in order, but here we are. Remember when they raised the prices?
Yes.
And we're like, we did it so that the games would look better. This isn't one of their strong entries. The animations in this, in Endless Fables Dark Moor, very much looks like some of the first Artifex Mundi games that we got on Xbox. They're just, the facial, everything is gorgeous scenery wise. I love the art style.
It's just in motion.
But the moment they start moving heads and mouths, shit goes sour real quick. and I've just learned to accept it. I think if you care enough about playing these games, if you enjoy them enough, you just kind of learn to live with it and accept that that's what they look like. And if it bothers you real bad, you just hold B and skip the cutscene. Whatever. All you're here for is to hunt and find objects, and you're still satisfied. I don't think it would bother me that they did that. that the graphics are bad. Not necessarily even bad. They're just kind of jank. But it wouldn't bother me if it wasn't their excuse for raising the prices on them. And I'm not even like against the fact that they raised the prices because I get it. But don't use that as your excuse and then not improve the game. Beyond that.
Well, when was this originally released on PC? Because we have to remember, this isn't developed by Artifacts. This is developed by Sunward Games.
I am not sure what the actual release date for this one was on PC.
So it's very possible mm-hmm. this was a game that was done before the price hike.
These are often May of 2015, it looks like.
So this is before their price hike went up.
I'm sorry, 2018.
No.
Then
I'm not sure.
That's when this is a... Well, that's when a review was posted for it. I don't know what the actual release date is. Usually Google tells me it's not. It's giving me a review date. Anyway.
No, whatever.
It's fine. It's at least a couple years old. And I don't remember when the price hike was. But I don't want to hold that against it, you know. It's an older one. It's been ported. But given that it is at the higher price, you at least have to mention it. Because if you don't, people will be like, why didn't you mention that it doesn't look good even though they raised the price? So here I am. Yeah, it could be better. I love the games anyway. I don't care. One thing about Endless Fables Darkmoor that I want to point out, though, that I absolutely loved about it, is that the story reminded very much of Nightmares from the Deep.
Mm.
Not in like a copycat kind of way, because it was clearly a different type of storyline, but a lot of the art, the color palette, the mood, the puzzle solving, I was like, man, this is the Artifacts Mundi I have missed. This is good. I was in my element. I was happy as a pig in mud. I was like, fuck yes, this is my type of Artifacts Mundi. Also, it's spooky. Not fear pee level spooky, but that's a jump scare.
Yeah.
Spooky. And it'll get you if you're prone to those.
Not fear pee, fear tinkle, maybe.
Yeah, it just might be like...
Fear spritz.
Fear, yeah, you know, fear moisture. It's a, you know... You'll notice something has occurred, but you might not be able to put your finger on exactly what.
That's grosser, actually. Thinking about it, that's a lot grosser.
Maybe. But either way, there's a lot more jump scares in this. And I think that's why, again, it pulled, you know, just with the color palette and everything, it felt so much like diving back into Nightmares from the Deep, and I was so on board for it that I was really happy. It was great. I know there are people who get annoyed over how janky the animations are. I don't care at this point. It's kind of just part of the charm, and I only pay attention because I'm like, fuck, I have to talk about it. That's how reviews work. But as far as actual gameplay and everything goes, it's the good hardcore Artifacts Mundi point and click in that you already know and love if you're into these games. If you're not into them or if you've never played one, I think even with it being the middle of a series, it's one you could pick up and start with. And it's actually one of the easier ones because if you want the completion in it, you don't have to play it on expert.
That's good.
It does have one thing that I like to bitch about, though, and that's those goddamn morphing objects. I hate those things. They are only in the collectibles. They are not in the hidden object puzzles, thankfully, because that would really just have me pissed off. But, you know, at least you only have to deal with the collectibles doing the morph thing. So there are plenty of guides on Steam. If you miss one like I did and you replay through the whole game, only to realize that the one you missed was actually at the very beginning of the bonus chapter and you could have avoided replaying the whole game for a second time. You know, I'd
proud
like
of you.
I'm so glad that they include achievement tracking in Artifacts Mundi games. Because so many devs fucking don't.
Yeah, that's a trend that I don't like. If achievement tracking's there, make use of it.
Yeah, but I absolutely wish that there was some kind of in-game tracking for the collectibles. So even at the end, you could at least see like, oh, I missed it in this, you know, specific scene or whatever. Mm. That's just wishful thinking. These are mobile games that are being ported, you know, to Steam. And so I'm not mad about it, but if they wanted to like take one suggestion and really stick with it, that'd be the one. Don't even care about the animations. Give me some way to see where I missed the collectible. just one. Even there have been a couple of games too that at least showed you which collectible you missed. But now they don't even do that. You used to be able to like click in the journal and it would say, oh yeah, you're missing this one. And you'd be like, okay, well, I have to play through the whole game, but at least I know what I'm looking for. Not now. Not with morphing objects. Morphing objects just want you to get fucked. Yeah. All that said and done. It's Artifacts Money Game. It's a good one. I love that it's got that Nightmares from the Deep feel, aesthetic, and gameplay. And I am 100% on board, even with my minor complaints.
Well, then $15, what's your verdict?
Buy it. I don't think I've ever not had to buy it for an Artifacts Money Game. I've had some.
Last one was a try it.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was that the one with the private eye dude, though, wasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah, that one wasn't the best.
Because you were bummed about giving one a try. You're like, the streak's over, but it's still a good game.
Yeah, I mean, they're not all going to hit with you the same way. And I clearly have like a preference for the ones that I get at this point. Yeah. Dark Carnival is still absolutely one of the top ones. Nightmares from the Deep is a fantastic series. So clearly this one like struck a chord because it has that Nightmares from the Deep vibe going for it. So, I mean, you know, there's probably people who play the damn private detective ones with that guy and are like, these are great. And I just don't like them.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Klaus, developed and published by La Casa Entertainment, released June 18th on the Switch for $14.99. Klaus is lost and alone. Who, where, why? He doesn't know anything. Only you can help him find the truth. Join Klaus and K1, a friendly brute, as you explore this puzzle platform game. We covered this one a couple of years ago on the PS4. It made its way over to the Switch. Chris, what do you think of it?
Hey, yeah, so Klaus, first off, congratulations to the developer for rising to the very top of my list alphabetically, because it's actually spelled out -Klaus-.
Yeah.
So, it's actually now the first game on my list.
Yay!
Yes, so Klaus is, on its face, a kind of, like, puzzle platformer, where you go through these actually pretty large levels, manipulating, you know, platforms and dodging spikes and like trying to get to the door at the end and stuff like that. But after the first world, it actually gets really interesting because you basically fight a boss who looks like a like big giant like hulking version of the hero, and he actually becomes a playable character that you then switch between the two and like kind of tackle things more in a three, you know, like the Lost Viking style kind of thing, you know, like doing teamwork. And then it just gets weird. Like this game actually, like it starts off seeming like it's just going to be another one of those games and then like really like pulls the rug out from under you. And I won't say too much more about that, because it's best to experience it. But yeah, so like the game at its core is basically, you know, you control Klaus, who is, you know, a person who woke up who has no memories. He just has the name Klaus on his arm. And so I guess he figures that's him. And he's like he looks like a office guy with a pompadour. That's all we know about him from the onset. And then, yeah, so basically it's, you know, he wakes up in a basement and he has to get out of the basement, which is, you know, this all red area and stuff. And, yeah, plenty of obstacles in his way, including, like I said, spikes and, you know, buzz saws and things that actually aren't in basements, which you can jump or double jump your way through. You can walk and run and do different things like that. But the main mechanic is that you actually, like, while you are controlling Klaus, you actually are a disembodied presence in the game. So he does refer to you sometimes and talks to you directly. And what your role in that way is, like, you actually use the right trigger buttons to basically do, like, interact with the map in ways that, you know, you aren't doing directly with Klaus. So, for instance, if there's a platform on a line between two gears, you would highlight it, and then once it's highlighted, you can use the right stick to control it. So you're kind of controlling an aspect of the platforms themselves as well as the character who's doing the platforming. And this is actually handled in really interesting ways, because certain stages will have you, of course, going from point A to point B. But sometimes you'll come into a room and, like, the only thing in front of you, in front of Klaus, is a locked door and the exit. And what you actually are doing is you have to use the platforms to get the key to that lock from one point of the stage to the other without Klaus doing anything. So it then becomes like you manipulating, like, the level to get through it instead of just moving the character. So lots of really interesting stuff at play here. Like I said, the graphic style is, it kind of acts like it's an 8-bit platformer, but they didn't use 8-bit graphics. They actually use these interesting cartoony sprites and stuff like that. Oh, and then, you know, the music's good too. Actually, also another thing is that they have some of the stages have secret stages, and those stages are bonkers. I love them. The very first one is a stage that you have to get through where you can only move left. Like, you can only move Klaus left. You can't make him move right at all. And so you have to use a combination of doing that, you know, moving left, with manipulating the actual level to get him where he needs to go, which, of course, is in all kinds of directions. And then there's a second, the second level is, like, where it's actually a mirror, and, you know, you have to control both the top and bottom character at the same time. And, of course, both sides of the stage have different obstacles. So, like I said, this is a puzzle platformer, which are, you know, really numerous, especially on Switch. I mean, I reviewed like 100 of them myself. But I really like that this one kind of provides a difference, and it also provides a story. And the way that they present the story is actually really cool, because it's stylistic. As you're running through the level, things that Klaus is thinking and saying actually just appear on the level, like, while he's running. Like, it's just, you know, like, words will appear, like, under a platform that he's, you know, that he's going through. And it's, you know, it's really interesting, because it actually, you know, they, you know, it's finding out who he is, and just also, like, who you are. He's trying to piece together who this disembodied force is that's helping him along, and he's, like, actually trying to befriend you and things like that. And then, you know, like, there's just all kinds of interesting things going on here. So, outside of that, there's actually a, you know, that's the story mode, right? That's when you just press start game. Another interesting part of it is that you can go into arcade mode, which is available from the entrance there. And it's funny, because it takes you to, like, this thing that looks like a, you know, a really, really old computer screen kind of deal. And it actually gives you the entire list of every stage in the game, and you can just play through any one of them if you want. It doesn't, like, you know, it doesn't really, I don't think it does the story mode stuff on it, but, like, the words and dialogue still appear and things like that. But yeah, if you ever feel like replaying a level or just redoing something, or just playing, like, way ahead of where you're at, like, for instance, I played a few levels into Glitch World, which is the second to last world, and it's fantastic, because it is a world that is basically, like, glitching out, and you actually have to use that to get through some of the stage, which gave me a great memory of a friend of mine who took the Super Mario Brothers ROM and randomly cut and paste, like, code from it into different places. And what ended up happening is that it was a fully playable game, but the timer would cause the, like, world to start breaking apart. So it became like this kind of race to try and get through the game without the glitches making you stuck. And that's kind of like what this reminded me of. So I quite liked it. It's basically like, yeah, if somebody took and reprogrammed the game like randomly and stuff just started breaking. So it's got, yeah, some really interesting ideas in this game. And I'm actually really excited about it.
Nice. Well, overall, $15. What do you think of Klaus?
Well, $15 is a little on the higher end for this type of game, but I think I've made a pretty good case for the fact that a lot of care and work has gone into this, so I would actually say it's a buy it. In fact, this is one of the most interesting games in this genre that I have messed with so far, and so I would totally buy this, even if, you know, if I just saw that it was a puzzle platformer, I might not be interested, but seeing of, you know, what all is inside of this thing, it's actually well worth it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got one final PartyCast game to talk about. That is called Masky, developed by Digital Medley, published by Forever Entertainment, released June 11th on the Switch for $4.99. Take part in annual Grand Costume Ball. Dance to the mystic sounds and invite as many dancers as you can. Keep balance and watch out for special skills of other dancers' masks. Explore different worlds through the magic doors. Unlock and upgrade unique masks. Dance longer and longer, faster and faster. Pernell, how's your dancing?
Well, I got to say, my dancing is pretty on point. Just saying. I've never gotten any points. Just saying. Masky is a hard nut to sell here, and the reason for that will be revealed very shortly. The idea behind Masky is at the beginning of the game, you choose a mask to wear. You start out with one mask, and you gain more as you've played subsequent sessions and earned experience points, which I'll talk about shortly, to unlock new masks. So you pick a mask, and the game begins. And the idea is that music will start to play. And the music has no bearing on what you, the player, do. It's just good music that plays while you're playing the game. At this time, you are tasked with going either left or right. Just go left to right. And as you do that, your character kind of starts to slide a little, like tilt in that direction as they are walking in that direction. And then there is immediately a balancing bar that appears in the middle of the screen. If you lean too far to the right or too far to the left, you fall over, and that's the end of your game. Now, as you go left and right, you'll start to see other dance patrons show up at the edge of the screen. And they themselves will be doing their own bit of a dance. And your goal is to walk up to those people by dancing and grab them so that they can extend your dance line. Each person you can come across has different, like, say, quote unquote, properties. So they'll make you lean a little bit further to the right or to the left. Basically, think of them like they weigh more. They weigh different amounts. Just think of it like that. So as you take on more people on different sides of your character of various qualities, it will become harder and harder to maintain your balance going to left from left to right. As you get these people, a counter will increase. And eventually, you will get a message that says, you know, like, X area unlocked. And at that point, when you go either left or right, instead of seeing another person, you'll see a door. When you enter that door, you go to the new area, and the cycle repeats again with a new background. You're still collecting more people. You're still trying to extend that conga line. Now, every once in a while, though, when you pick up a person, an effect will also take place. And the effect is pretty much always meant to inhibit your progress. Sometimes the screen will flip upside down. Sometimes it will become very bright white, so you're blinded. Just various things that will occur. Though I did come across one cool effect where the line will break, but you'll maintain your score. So it makes it easier for you to survive because you'll lose people from your conga line, but you won't be penalized by score. Eventually, you're going to tip over because the game is designed to be quick. And once you tip over, the game is over, and you will get experience points based on the number of people you had. That, well, I won't say number of people because that earlier mentioned power-up. But based on the number of people you've had total in your conga line. Once you break a certain plateau, you will level up, which unlocks the next mask. And the mask is essentially a new song and different balance properties. So it might be a heavier character to start, which means it'll be a little harder for you to balance your line, something like that. But for the most part, that is essentially the game. Every time you upgrade to another stage, you'll have a different balance property. You'll still be picking up people on your left and your right. Eventually, you unlock in the next area to go to and do it again. Is the game bad? No, not at all. I enjoyed what I played of it. However, and I think a number of people might pick up on this when I say it, it felt like I was playing a mini game in Mario Party that was somehow turned into a full game. Mm-hmm. But it didn't add enough to the game to make it its own game. It's something that I can see myself picking up and dabbling with every once in a while, but it got old fast. It's like the equivalent, like you saw what you could see everything the game has to offer for the most part in like 20 minutes. Though you do unlock new masks, which includes new music and stuff. The game itself doesn't really change. It's just, a new tune. And he's a little harder to balance than he was before, you know? So it's like, I got my fill of it and was like, okay, I'm kind of done now. And I didn't look back, but it's hard to say because it's basically a matter of like, is $5 worth it to you in this regard? And in some respects, my brain wants to say, I'll just go buy some Super Mario Party and play a bunch of other games with this one cropped in there somewhere, but it's not called Masky. It's probably called like Big Bomb's Balance Beam or something. I don't freaking know. That's the challenge of games like this. When you have a whole compilation of like mini game collections just floating out there on various, on the system, all over the place. If you're going to release a game that's essentially one mini game, it has to be one hell of a mini game to justify paying money to get just that game. And yeah. I honestly felt like this one wasn't quite that.
Well, at the $5 price tag, what's your official verdict?
If you're aching to spend, just giving up $5, it's a try it. But if your interest is more about value despite the cost, I would go with denying. I won't say despite, but value regardless of cost, I would go with denying. No. But if you're interested in trying it for $5, it's a try. Because I did enjoy what I did play of it. It just got old.
Yeah. Well. Sounds like overall it was a good week of reviews.
Oh, yeah. Desperados alone was plenty. But then I got the second hit, which made it even that much better. All was legacy.
Nice. Good stuff. All right. Well, that usually is it for the... Good. That is it for the PartyCast portion of the show. We have two more reviews to take care of, so we are going to switch over to me and Tim Ekibis chatting. Does anyone have any final words before we switch over?
I don't know. I'm just counting change for a bank I can't take it to. I don't know what's going on with that. But anybody else? Crazy words?
Great crazy words.
There it is. Totally hip jive cat turkey holler.
All right, and finally tonight we're bringing in our good friend Tim Ekibis. Tim, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. I just voted.
You voted?
So, you know, yeah, participate in some democracy or a pony show thereof.
Nice.
Yeah.
I always forget when different primaries are.
Yeah, gotta pay attention to that shit. I don't know if the Pennsylvania one already happened or not.
Yeah, it already happened.
Okay, all right.
I did my civic duty, so...
Duty. Yeah, and I got a sticker this time, so one might say it was the first time I actually ever voted. I don't know how, like, I have been voting for years and years and years now, yet I have never, ever gotten a sticker before.
Never?
Never. I don't... Huh. Fuck if I know. Yeah, I got a sticker.
That's some bullshit.
Yep. Well,
how about the stickers, man?
Yeah, otherwise, how are people going to know you voted? Because it certainly won't be reflected in what happens in the results.
Yeah, seriously. Democracy is fucked.
Actually, well, not in fairness, but I did see that our country is no longer rated as a functional democracy anyway, so what do you expect? So, like, I mean... It's not
silver lining, I guess.
Not currently functional. So, yeah.
Oh my lord. So, how was your weekend?
Oh man, that was like 2 or 3 days ago. Now you're making me think. Oh, it was Father's Day. That's a
yeah. Good how was day. Your Father's Day? Did you do anything fun for Father's Day?
Yeah, I ate pizza till I had regrets. Because I love pizza, but pizza, like, tends, like, for whatever, like, it kind of makes me sick these days. Like, if, like, very, you know, greasy, you know, traditional like mozzarella pepperoni pizza just like makes me feel ill. But I literally have not eaten any pizza whatsoever. Well, other than like I've had like a bit of my child's like microwave pizza, but I haven't had like real pizza made at a pizzeria in months, like since like 3 months, probably 4 months. And it's my favorite food. And I was like, fuck it, for Father's Day, I want to eat pizza until I feel like I shouldn't have done it. And I did.
Mission accomplished.
I had to lie down and drink some water. I was like, oh man, that greasy ass fucking pizza. It did the work, but man, it was so goddamn good.
Mistakes were made.
Well, intentionally, so no one to blame but myself. I don't even feel bad about it. When I had leftovers yesterday, I didn't feel nearly as bad. So I don't know whether it's because it was cold. I do enjoy some cold pizza. It's my favorite pizza right behind hot pizza. Don't like warm, you know, room temperature pizza. That's no good. But you get it nice and hot or nice and cold, then you're doing some good stuff. But yeah, I felt fine. So like, I don't know if just some manner of the grease was no longer present. So whatever.
It was good. It worked out for you.
It worked out. It was great. You know, got some Nintendo eShop points to spend.
Nice.
Even though the sale is sadly over now, but that's fine because I spend money on the sale. So now I was thinking of just getting the Clubhouse games because that just came out. But I have not made any moves as of yet.
No. I need to play more Clubhouse games. I picked that up and I only played a little bit of it because I just keep going back to Animal Crossing.
Yeah, I feel like my time with Animal Crossing is starting to approach an end.
Mm.
It is tough to squeeze in every day now that I'm back to work. So, you know, I might, instead of playing every day, I might play it like every couple days, I guess. Like a sane person, but
I fired up daily and check my beach. I got to see if there's a bottle there. I got to pick up the shells.
Yeah, I got to see what's for sale in the shop. Yeah. I feel like they know how much money I have in savings, and they're putting high-priced items in there that I want just to try to get the money out of me. Like, they had a server in there, and now I'm like, oh, man, if I get a whole bunch more money, I can build a server room in the basement of my house. What a dumb idea that is. It's 100,000 bells per server, so.
Really? 100,000?
100,000, so.
Damn.
Whatever, I had it sitting in the bank. I dumped turnips at a good price last week, so, and I've already paid off my house, so.
Nice. I am on my final upgrade.
Yeah. And people say, like, why do you pay off the last one that's like 2.5 million bells? And the reason is because it makes Tom Nook really mad. Like, like, he's not, like, yelling at you, but, like, you look at his face, and it is angry eyebrows. He is, like, pissed off at your smug little debt-paying ass. Like, it is worth it for that alone, just to see him be pissed. Like, yeah, fuck you. I don't owe you shit, raccoon.
This is my village now.
You got nothing you can hold over my head. Yep. Got all my bridge and slope projects are all taken care of for the moment. So, yeah.
Kiss my ass, raccoon. Kiss
my ass, raccoon. That would have been a good Mega Man X villain. Or Metal Gear villain. One or the other. Kiss my ass, raccoon.
Oh my lord. Anyway, right, so yeah, we have games to talk about. We should get to those.
We got a couple of PC ports here this evening coming to the Switch.
All right, well, let's get to them. The first one to talk about is called Railway Empire Nintendo Switch Edition, developed by Gaming Mind Studios, published by Calypso Media, released June 19th on the Switch for $39.99. United States, 1830, the new world is in its ascendancy, industry is booming, and the race is on to establish the most dominant and powerful rail empire in all of North America. It's time to outthink and outmaneuver your competitors as you lead your company into the 20th century. Tim, tell us about Railway Empire.
My God, I have never played a railway sim in my life, and I guess I was not prepared for quite how much this game was going to fry my brain with logistics and commerce and such. So this game has existed on the PC and on other consoles for some time now, and it is a railway simulator. So you get out there are different scenarios in the game, mainly set around North America. There are some, I believe they are DLC. They have to be purchased separately for Europe. And I feel like there's another country involved. It's not Canada. Not coming to mind. Either way, there's DLC campaigns that take you to other places that aren't just the old quest. So, yeah, you go into, say, the first campaign, and you're out there in the Midwest, starting off in Omaha, Nebraska, I believe. That's where Omaha is. And you are tasked with the owner of your railway company with, like, all right, we need to start building some tracks out here and connecting these towns and moving goods around so the towns will grow. And you're going to do all this shit. And I'm going to go to Washington. But before I go to Washington, I'm going to tell you how to do a few things. And he does tell you how to do a few things. So you go in there, and obviously it's like, okay, well, you need to build, to get a train to go from here to there, you have to build a station at there. And then you need to connect here to there with train tracks. Like, okay, cool. Now, like, okay, well, we need to connect from here to there to this farm over there so we can get farm, you know, corn. I think it is corn. Need to get corn to this town and this town. But to get two trains moving to two towns, you have one set of track, and if you try to have the trains go up the track, they're going to run into each other. So now we're going to teach you how to build, like, a little side track. So when there's two trains using the track, one train can go off, you know, off to the side and wait for the other one to pass and then move forward, and things move smoothly. And then he's like, all right, you're good. I'm going off to Washington. Deuces. And you're like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. At least it felt like I didn't know what I was doing. It felt like I wasn't quite prepared to start moving forward. But that is because I got in the weeds, like, looking through the menus at all the stuff you could do and clicking on things on the map and, like, looking at stuff you could do. When you first start this game, the best piece of advice I could give is just, like, keep it simple. Don't go, like, looking at, like, he comes back from Washington, spoiler, like, after you've accomplished a couple goals, he'll come back, and then you start working on some other things. But, you know, it was real easy to, like, get overwhelmed early on with just, like, oh my god, there's all the stuff I can build. I don't think I quite understand how putting signals down on the track to direct trains this way and that works. Like, I don't understand how all the supply and demand indicators work. I can apparently buy, you know, businesses and buildings and towns. I can set up supply towers, but I don't know how frequently I should set them up so trains will stay supplied. I still actually don't know that. I don't, like, they don't tell you specifically, like, oh, you should have one for each, you know, X amount of track, miles of track. I just kind of set them up everywhere just in case. And I think the worst that happens is that your train just has a random breakdown, like, out in the middle of nowhere, and then it takes a while to fix, and then it moves about on its way. It doesn't, like, the train doesn't die. Whatever. So each scenario will have a certain amount of goals set for you to reach in a certain amount of years. Just as the game is going, time will pass. I can't recommend enough that you just pause the fuck out of it, especially early on. I actually ended up restarting the first campaign because as I was fumbling and bumbling trying to do, like, the very early things, like, almost an entire year went by without me knowing. So when I started up the second time, I was like, okay, I'm going to pause it. I'm going to get stuff set up, and then I'm going to let it go. So I definitely recommend for beginners, like, use that pause feature. And also because this is a PC to console port and has been on other consoles for a time, like, the controls initially, I was, like, kind of flabbergasted by them, and I was having a tough time just acclimating myself to, like, okay, I push this button here to do that. I didn't realize, like, it puts, like, little movies on the map sometimes to show you, like, what to do with, like, putting down signals and split tracks. Like, it's there to help you, but yeah. I didn't realize you actually have to, there's a different button to remove that movie from the map. So you don't have to watch it again. And I was just getting confused. And I'm like, okay, I'm clicking on this area. I want to build the thing, but it keeps showing me this movie. And then I was like, oh, wait, no, it says right there at the bottom, I got to remove this first and then do that. And when you go into cities, it's like, okay, if you click on the train station, that gives you one thing. If you click on the city itself, that gives you another thing. But you can get used to it. It's not, because you can pause it and just leave it paused. Like, you do have time to stop there and think and, like, be like, okay, I am going to grasp these controls and like really look at what I need to look at and figure out what I need to do. And it's fine. It was definitely overwhelming at first. And I was having kind of a little bit of a bad time, but eventually I figured it out. I got comfortable enough with it, with like pausing and being like, especially when I got confused, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to pause it. I'm going to think about this. I'm going to look at all the stuff and I'm going to figure it out. But early on, I was like ready to start shooting for the moon in this campaign. like, okay, I'm going to connect like, you know, these tracks to these cities and everything in between. And I got like four trains running around delivering goods here, there, and everywhere. And when the dude finally came back from Washington, whenever I hooked up whatever it was I needed to hook up, then he starts explaining like the commerce, like, oh, you can click here and see what this city needs in order to grow. And I'm like, oh, I just had shit delivering all over the place, so I hope they need cows over here and whatever over here. So I definitely like should have just been like, okay, just, you know, look at the quests, look at your goals, follow your goals, and, you know, wait for the game to introduce stuff to you. I was poking around, and then it's like I found like there's a whole tech tree under there. And I was like, like, oh, you can research all these upgrades for your trains and different engines and all this other shit. And I was just like, oh, my God, should I be doing something with this? Do I need to be doing something with this right now in the beginning? And it was like, no, you don't. Like, just wait, chill out. The game will explain it to you when you need to explain it to you. All you need to worry about now is getting some cattle to Denver. That's it. Before 1964 or whatever. Yeah, so there are, like, if you take it easy, you take it slow, let the game, like, tell you things, you will feel less overwhelmed, I guess, than trying to just do what I did and suck it all in all at once. It definitely, as a PC port, some things, especially playing in handheld mode, are pretty small to read, like the text. And like some of the things you need to click on, like the signals on the track. So you've got to zoom way in to kind of get your cursor over them and select them. I wish it was like a little easier just to, you can like use the triggers to, jump between towns or trains, but there isn't something for like the individual pieces on the track. I guess that would be a bit too much, but, sometimes when you're trying to select little things, it could definitely be a little tough. Playing on the big screen though, I feel like it was generally, a bit better. And just easier to see the things you need to click on. Out of the box, you get, there's like four or five different, well, there's campaign scenarios, but then it also has like, you know, just like free build modes and stuff like that. Each campaign has like a different amount of difficulties. You know, the version where you can just pause it forever all the time, definitely will hurt your rank. And I definitely don't care. you need to learn this game first before you can start flying with it, but it was cool. Like I haven't really dug into like a real, you know, building sim game in a long time. So once I got going with it, and once I started kind of like figuring things out and getting a little more comfortable with it and like realizing like, oh, I am just, there are way too many trains over here and I just need to destroy this. Like just, yeah, there are some things about the menus and controls that are just stupid. And that I think could have been done better. But like, again, once you figure it out, it's like, oh, okay, well now at least I know how this game wants me to think and I can get in. And it was like something specifically with like picking a rail line, which a rail line is the route that your train takes around the map, like what destinations you've designated for it to hit, and to like edit it or like delete stops. It's like the series of button presses to get into that menu and then actually delete them and start rewriting them is not intuitive at all. But like, if you take it slow, you will make it there. You will find your way to the destination. So yeah, you have different campaigns in different parts of the country, and the world. there's DLC to pick up if you so choose. There is, you know, a free building mode. It's pretty neat overall. It's pretty cool.
So your verdict at $40?
$40 is a good price for it. I didn't look it up. I just kind of assumed it would be like 50 or 60. So yeah, 40 is a pretty good buy if you're looking to check out a train simulator. Like it's not, we're just kind of assuming the point here that like you don't have a PC to play it on, or you don't want to play it at a PC, because obviously that would be the most ideal place to play it. But yeah, it's not bad on the Switch, and $40 is a good price for it, I think.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. One final game to talk about tonight is called Tower of Time, developed by Event Horizon and Stage Clear Studios, published by Digirati, released June 23rd on PS4, 25th on the Switch, 26th on Xbox One for $24.99. Lead the ultimate party of heroes into the Tower of Time, a vertical battleground filled with lore, mystery, and combat, combining the nuances of classic RPGs with challenging tactical combat. Tower of Time transforms each battle into a puzzle of magic and metal. Tim, tell us about Tower of Time.
Oh, man. I think this game is great, and I hated playing it. oh, man. So, yeah, Tower of Time, this is a, like, 3D dungeon crawly RPG thing that is just, like, right up my alley. You are this dude who uncovers the, I guess it would be the top of the Tower of Time, which is a tower that is... I don't know whether it was built upside down into the ground, or it was like buried under the ground, or maybe it was just knocked down into the ground like a mallet upon a wooden stake. Either way, the thing is not above ground. Yeah, this mysterious tower, you go there as a young man and you come back there as a more accomplished man with some minions. You get in there, your character sits upon this like crystal throne, which he can use to like project his thought. That's how they justify you like controlling your characters and giving them commands and communicating with them as they move down through the tower. But yeah, you start off with a couple of guys. You got a lady like hunter-ish character with a bow and arrow, and you got a guy with a sword and shield. So the game has like a polygonal overhead perspective, not unlike your divinities, your Pillars of Eternities, like those games. It definitely has a look like those, or I guess, you know, it also kind of looks like Diablo because that's also an overhead polygonal game. But so you go down into the depths of you start progressing down into this dungeon. And again, this is a PC game. So when you are exploring the dungeon, you have direct control over your character. You're not using a cursor to click around. You have direct control over your character. If you hold X, it will highlight any interactable objects in your vicinity, which could be, you know, items you can pick up. It could be gold lying around over there. It could just be points of interest that will give you some lore. It could be things you need to interact with to advance the plot or other such things on the floor of the Tower of Time. The game has a big focus on these combat encounters, and it gives you a lot of tools, to engage with them, except for one important one, which I'll get to. You got different, you know, all kinds of equipment with different like stat buffs, and features on them that you find as you progress down through there, different abilities. Your party is going to expand well beyond two characters. Your characters like build like a relationship with your main character based on kind of the decisions that you will make. Like very early on, you come across a statue with that is like, "Yo, if you make a blood sacrifice to me, I will help you out." Like, okay, cool. So there's a couple different ways you can go about it, but there is an instance where your fighter will be like, "Okay, well, this frog we could sacrifice is kind of lame. Like, oh wait, we don't have to kill something. I can just, you know, give it some of my blood." And your hunter's character is like, "Hey, maybe making a blood pact with the devil isn't a good idea," which then leaves it to your character to influence your party or not influence them, which can have impact on your reputation. So it's not just a dungeon crawler. It does also have moments where you are making more, out of combat, strategic, like character based decisions, like you would in an RPG where you're running around and going into towns and talking with people and taking quests and such like that. It still kind of still has elements of that, though a bit more streamlined. So you get into combat, and when you get into combat, it shifts you to a discrete arena. Like, you don't fight. You will definitely see enemies. You can walk up to them, and it will show you like what enemies will be in this encounter, and kind of tell you how hard or easy it might be. And you can decide whether to engage in the combat or flee. But once you engage with it, it shifts to a different arena, which, yeah, it's not the space you encounter the enemy necessarily. And yeah, so it's not a thing where it's like, oh, you walk up to three enemies on the map and then you fight those three enemies. Like, an encounter will be a situation where, like, those enemy types will kind of keep pouring in from certain places on the map it ports you to. And you'll see, like, a percentage at the top of, like, how many enemies in the encounter you have defeated up until you get to 100%, and the encounter's over. Congratulations. And they don't always play out the same. Like, even if you go back into the same one, like, enemies will spawn in different numbers from like, different spawn places on the map, which can be tricky if you're getting particularly stuck on one. But, again, this is a game that's ported over from PC, and when you get into combat, I hate the controls. I cannot, like, I had such a difficult time with them, just moving my characters around and trying to execute tactics and use abilities, and I was just, like, so frustrated with every combat. Like, I felt like I was fighting more against the controls than I was against the creatures. And I don't, it's hard to put my finger on why exactly. The game operates where you, if you hold, like, left trigger, it will bring up a radial where you will then use the stick to highlight one of your characters to select which one you want to control or give orders to, and then you release the button, and then that's the character you're controlling. That's how you confirm it. And the more I thought about it, the thing, I think that's something that, and it's the same way with abilities, I should say, and abilities are over on the right trigger, and it's the same kind of thing where you have to highlight, you hold the button, highlight it, and then release said button to select it. And I think it's just my expectation with menus like that is you're going to open the menu, make your selection with the left stick. In this case, you use the right stick. You're going to use your left stick to make the selection, and then you push a button to confirm it. But that's not the way it works in this game. It's just kind of like you highlight, release, and, like, I got around that eventually, but it took me a while to, like, I wouldn't say I was comfortable with it, but I got it. And there's, so once you select a character, you can then, you know, you use, then you're using a cursor. No longer are you using direct control over a character. Now you're using a cursor to point where you want that character to move to, and then you confirm it and they move to it. Now, depending on whether you have selected the passive or active mode for your character, they may walk up to that area near an enemy and they might stand there and just stare at them. Or they might be like, oh, I'm not standing close enough to this enemy. I need to take a few more steps forward and attack them. And the game preaches, like, taking things slow and letting enemies come to you. But when you have, like, ranged enemies, you kind of have to go to them. like, you can't just, like, stand there and let them come to, like, you have to move. And I just kept being in these situations where it's like, you can pause it, but, like, the second you make a selection, the game will just unpause. It's not like in, say, Railway Empire, where, you know, it doesn't unpause until I say, okay, I have put in my actions, now unpause. So it was like constantly fighting the game to, like, just give me a second. Just give me a second to move these guys around, to try to get them in range, to try to use these abilities, to, you know, actually really engage in this kind of this well-constructed combat system that they've put together. It, like, clearly I can see all the pieces are there to have a banger of a time, like the abilities, the characters, the depth of the stats and the equipment and what you can do and be creative. Like, it's all there. I just, like, could not get past the controls to really engage and enjoy with it. On these maps, you then have to, cause the map is larger than your view is, and you can use the, you have to hold L, and then you can use the right stick to zoom in and out. But, you know, the more zoomed out you are, it kind of gets tougher to click on exactly what you need to click on to move your characters around. But then you can see where enemies are coming from, though you also can't see the whole map. And what I was experiencing a lot is I'm, like, dealing with combat over here, but unbeknownst to me, more enemies have spawned on the other side of the map that I can't see. And, like, I don't know, like, am I supposed to be constantly pausing and, like, looking around just to see where they're coming from, that there's guys sneaking up on me. like, it just didn't feel I just could not get into the groove with, like, how they clearly wanted everything to work. And yeah. I don't know whether that is just a result of how they ported that system to console, I don't know. I mean, some of it is certainly on me for just the controls just did not jive with my brain.
Yeah.
Because obviously it will probably be much easier to control on a PC when you're just making clicks with a mouse. When you're on a higher resolution screen, you could probably see the whole map or just easily scroll in and out with a mouse wheel. But I just felt like a fumbling, bumbling idiot in all the combats and didn't ever feel like I was executing tactics with a skill and grace and savvy that I was expected to. It was just kind of like, oh my God, okay, I made it work. I made it through this one. Thank goodness. And it just did not come together for me. And unfortunately, there is no options in the game at this time for customizing or fiddling with those controls. Oh, fucking A. I just remembered. So when you get into your first combat, the game is like, hey, here's all of these tutorial pages. There's like 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 of them, like all in a row. And it's just like, a lot to take in all at once. But one of them in particular, there's a very specific thing that pissed me off, is one of your abilities on your, and this is their fault, this is definitely not my fault, is your warrior has an ability called, like, Wall of Stone or something like that, where you can create a wall to, like, block off a path. Like, okay, if there's melee characters coming from, you know, one side, and you don't want to deal with them yet, or they're moving in on your exposed long-range archer, it's like, okay, I'm going to throw this wall in their way to just buy some time. The instructions for how to do that spell are wrong. Pro tip, you need to select the spell by holding ZR, selecting it, releasing ZR, then you've selected the spell. What the instructions tell you to do is then hold ZR and then draw the line where you want the wall to be. That is not correct. You have to hold R in order to draw the line where you want the wall to be. And like, trying to execute that spell was making me so mad, because I'm like, it says right there what I fucking need to do, and it's not working. And at one point, I just, like, mashed some buttons, and, like, the thing popped up, and I'm like, well, there it is. They're like, I mean, that's not a useful shape, but there it is. Like, it came out somehow. I don't know what I did. And like, again and again, I, like, went back and, like, looked, and I read it over and over and over again, and then eventually I'm like, I wonder if they meant R. And they did mean R. So that's just wrong, and you guys should really fix that. that's bad. That gave me a big mad early on in this game that I could not figure out how to, draw walls. But yeah, it this is like one of those that bums me out, cause I was like so desperate to like get, you know, hip deep in this game and its systems and really enjoy what it had to offer. And I just kept getting so mad at the combat, just feeling like it was just totally out of my control, and it bums me out.
Man, well, overall, $25, we need a verdict.
It's not a bad price, but I had such a bad time with the game, I can't possibly recommend it on the console. Open-ended, like, I'm like, kind of thinking, like, maybe I'll check it out on PC, and see how it is on there, because I do think it's a really cool game. But, you know, word of warning, I guess. Like, I think most people will have a better experience than I did, but if you are that person who is going to have the same experience I did, I don't want to walk you into it. So, I guess be wary of the Tower of Time. And maybe, hopefully they'll, like, I don't know, patch in some other control options. I don't know. I hope.
Yeah, it's possible that some of these issues and complaints have been addressed between when you played and the day one patch, which, yeah, again, the joys of reviewing things pre-release. Sometimes this stuff just happens.
I was playing something on Sunday night, and I saw that Tower of Time had patched, and I was like, ooh, maybe they added something. And I went in, and I was like, oh, damn it, and they didn't. Oh, well. I don't know what they did, but... So yeah, I hope it becomes a game that I can like more.
Works for me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode.
That's it.
Tim, thanks for being here. Thanks for doing your thing. Thanks to Cole, Purnell, and Chris for being here earlier on in the show, hanging out with us and chatting.
Chitty chatting.
Do you have any final words before we end the show?
Nothing? I guess not. The disaster of the past. You've been keeping up what's been going on in the wrestling world in the last week.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's been distressing.
Yeah.
It's been real distressing, and it's interesting. I feel, to their credit, I feel like AEW has been making some good moves with their for those that don't know, like basically the wrestling community has been having a hashtag Me Too movement, and a lot of guys have been getting called out for extremely shitty behavior, or illegal behavior. There's been some tough stuff to read and see go on, but clearly there is some culture that needs to be cleaned up, especially in the UK, but in the world in general. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things go. Next couple of weeks as things continue to develop, or maybe, yeah. I don't know, maybe things will just blow over and everyone will forget and they'll be like, yay, Velveteen Dream. But hey, you know what? You know what's good? Good news? Good news is
what's
fucking
good.
Asuka tapped out Charlotte last
night. That was awesome. Oh, dude, I saw the video of that, and because I didn't get to watch it live, but I watched the recap and I saw the video of her tapping out, and I'm like, yes, it finally happened.
Finally, oh my god, like every time Charlotte is facing Asuka, I'm like, oh my god, Charlotte feels the need to have a belt again. But not this time. Asuka won, finally got a nice clean win over Charlotte. Apparently Charlotte's going to be off TV with an injury for a while, which is also good news because I am sick of her.
Yep.
So that is great. I love Asuka, and may the Empress reign forever.
Yeah, final words, may the Empress reign forever, and don't be a shitty person.
Don't be a try. Do your best. We'll be right back.